Hey, Gundam Maniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained Show Live. I'm your host, Adam Blue. Joining me is Steven. Steven, I'm always...
How's it going?
It's going good. I'm always worried about the technical difficulties, right? Like, I don't want to bring that up all the time and let it haunt me.
I mean, it's part of the show at this point. It's like it's ongoing lore, you know?
It kind of is, but then I felt bad because someone commented on a video from, I think, the live the week before. They're like, hey, I didn't see this uploaded, the podcast, anywhere, but I see why after they watched the video. But, you know, I want to say shout out to the chat. I had someone come in before streaming started named Joanne Bridges, perhaps?
Yeah.
And we're actually going to get to his, that's actually part of the show.
That was a fantastic topic. So I'm glad that Jawan brought that up.
And what's cool here though, is I guess he found the show through the podcast. And then I've even had other people in here say that they found the show from the podcast. So that's awesome. So that means I got to make sure I have the audio good to keep that up.
But exactly. Doing something right.
Yeah. shout out WD30th, Jonatron, Neo X, Robert, Ultronimus, Goblin Blob. Let's see, Jamkel X, Lucas Garrett. Cool, full house. Awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Good to see y'all.
Yeah. No, we'll have a good show today. I found this article that's like the top 10 Gundam series rated. And so I'm really curious, you and I going through it, what we agree with, what we don't. And then in general, what the chat agrees with. So,
yeah, this is going to be a fun one.
Yeah, I want to play it as a game. And I'm going to remind everyone when I get to it. When I start going through the list, every time I say the name of the show, you give your 1 through 10 ranking, not knowing what the others could be. That's always fun.
Oh, yeah. I like that one.
No, but so, Steven, have you recovered from the build you did for the Hobby Town thing?
Yeah. So I actually, I was trying to rearrange my shelf behind me. So if you're listening to the audio, I apologize. But, if you look behind me, I've got, you know, my little Gundam light that my wife got me for Christmas. There's the Master Grade Zeta 2.0, and then the Bawu is right there next to the light. And you can't see it because there's so many lights going on in the background right now, but the Mono Eye and the Beam Saber are on. So I can see them, but I don't think you can see that they're on.
Oh, no, I moved your thing over so everyone could see. So that's pretty cool. That's looking good. It's been cool to see like the evolution of the display.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty sweet. And like probably the most proud I am of the whole thing is the action base that I printed of my logo. Like,
oh yeah.
That thing is so cool looking.
I felt like that was like a key component to the model kit. Like, what's a signature in a way?
Yeah, yeah. You know, most of the entries actually did not have any kind of action base or presentation. Like, they just, you know, slapped their model kit like right on top of a sheet of paper. But the winner of the competition, he actually is a professional woodworker, professional carpenter. And so he has scraps of wood lying around his workshop all the time. And he, you know, I talked to him about it and he was like, oh yeah, you know, I craft these bases like individually for each model that I build, whether it's an airplane or a tank or a Gundam. And so he had this beautiful, like stained walnut piece that had like a little engraved gold, emblem on the front that said, you know, how am I forgetting it's EMS 11 Zuda or EMS 4 Zuda?
What
the model number is for the Zuda, but it's the Zuda.
Oh, that's pretty neat. So yeah, that, I think that adds a good touch when you have a custom base or stand or something.
You get a lot of points for that. I mean, that dude won like 3 categories that he was in. So,
okay. That would make sense then. That's cool. Anyway, if you guys want to get more details on that, check out Steven's stream from yesterday where we were talking about it. He kind of went into like that whole thing. Sounded fun.
I
need to do something like that.
Yeah, we need to find one near you because I think that entering these kind of local build, whether it's a competition or just like a build night, I think that getting that FaceTime is important with fellow Gundam fans.
Yeah.
I'd like to start hosting some more build nights over on Discord and stuff. So
yeah,
hold me accountable for that.
No, I did that for a little bit and then I stopped, but that was fun. I think it would be cool for us to like kind of do something where we're getting other people around to build. Like, it gives me a good excuse to sit down and build. You know, I think it's more fun with others sometimes. If you're not too busy talking and then never building, that's kind of my thing. But.
Right.
But anyway, before we get into the topics, just a couple interesting things. Speaking of kind of model kits, I've had this Batman fascination recently, and there's this Todd McFarlane Batmobile out there that's not too bad, but it's super basic. And then I've seen all these videos online of people customizing them, and it's all of the things you do, Steven, like all of the little things like magnets, LEDs, 3D printing pieces to replace things. And it's just like, whoa, like all of this skill stuff I've learned and acquired from the Gunpla building. It's like I can apply this to make like that screen accurate Batmobile.
Especially like if you could do the Tim Burton Batmobile that, like, remember when the sides of it split off?
Oh yeah, and it went through the alleyway. Yeah,
I used to have that toy Batmobile that did it, and I hated it because it was like the button to make it pop open was always like way too easy to accidentally hit.
Oh,
but if you could do that with magnets.
That's actually pretty neat because it is pretty cool how this McFarlane Batmobile is, where it's like it's pretty much hollow. And so like it really gives you a lot of and what's interesting, too, is it's only a single seat, whereas in the movie, it's obviously a two seater. But there's this website and I bought it. It's a kit that comes with the two seats, the guns and a new canopy, because the canopy on the McFarlane one opens up instead of sliding forward, which I thought would have been the easy thing to do. Yeah. But it's like as cool as it seems like McFarlane is for pushing out this stuff, it is kind of cheap. But it's like maybe that is an okay market to be in. You know, it's like it looks cool, but it's kind of cheap stuff.
Yeah, the McFarlane line, it's definitely like hit or miss as far as collectibles go. I would say that it's not quite the level of like Hot Toys. It's also not quite the price of like a Hot Toys statue, but
yeah.
You know, it's probably right around that Marvel Legends level of quality.
But even then, like, there's this thing I've learned about with action figures that I realize I like is when they're pinless. So, like, there's no pins. And McFarlane is one to just keep it that way because it's cheaper. But it's cool to see, like, Marvel Legends and, you know, SH Figure Arts, you know, amongst others, don't use the pins. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. So another thing, guys, I don't want to talk about this too much here because I want to do a more detailed discussion on the Free Speech Geek podcast show that's going to be next Monday. But just real quick about the Acolyte, I'm going to say some things. But yeah, again, if you want more details next week, it's just because of the storytelling. You know, like I look at Gundam and I'm amazed that however many years later, you know, 40, whatever, that they can like still treat the story with this, I mean, I don't want to say respect as if there's a disrespect, but it's more of the people understand how to write Gundam.
or just how to write in general.
Okay. So no. Finish the Acolyte, right? And my thoughts are, if someone gave me a bulleted list of like, this is what's going to happen in the show as Star Wars story beats, I would be like, okay, that's cool. But then when you're watching it, the moment-to-moment logic of writing how one scene moves to the next, it's more of they were just trying to figure out how to piece it together rather than having a plan to piece it together.
I mean, it really does feel like they had a lot of tentpole moments that they wanted to make happen, but then they didn't really have a clue on how to get there. And actually, I saw a reel on Instagram the other day, and let me just preface this by saying, you never know where wisdom is going to come from. And like, sometimes you're going to find bits of wisdom in the most unexpected places. So this was from a talk that was given by Trey Parker and Matt Stone of South Park.
Oh yeah.
And it was a piece of writing advice that they gave. And they were saying that like, if you're moving from story beat to story beat, and in between then you say the words, and then you're screwed. They were like, if you're going from story beat to story beat, you can only say one of two things. You either say this happened and therefore this happened, or you say this happened, but this happened. If in your story you say this happened and then this happened and they're not connected in some way, then you don't have a story.
Wow. That's a really good, short little analysis of, I guess, the problem with Acolyte, because it is kind of like that. There's neat things that would happen, but it's more of an, and then this happened. And I'm like, well, why? Yeah, that goes back to where it's like, well, why did that happen? Especially when they did like these two sort of reveals.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it yet. I mean, I guess I could, but I don't know. But anyway, there's these two reveals that it's like, that's cool, but why? Because without the why, I don't feel it was earned. That's what I was talking about. Like, I've noticed I like with action movies, I love action scenes, but I want a good reason why I am watching the action. It means more. And that made me think about Andor, how Andor doesn't necessarily have a bunch of action scenes. But at that point, it doesn't really matter because the whys are happening. Like, the story beats are just one into another that whole time. And you're almost like, okay, what's next? What's next? So it's to me, it's just fascinating how long UC Gundam has done a great job of like just sticking to some core. And how do you think they achieve that? Do you think you could say, oh, they have a Dave Filoni, because Tomino exited early.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not, and maybe this, you know, hold your tomatoes, but I hate Dave Filoni. just as much as I hate like Kevin Feige or like, you know, it's when you have a singular person that is your brand Bible, then you're in a bad place, because what's going to happen is eventually that person's going to walk away from the franchise or they pass away, you know? But if you don't have something on paper or some kind of guiding light principle that makes the thing, you know, resonate with everyone, then everyone who writes for that thing later is going to be lost. And, you know, you see it with like, you know, George Lucas stepping away from Star Wars, and it kind of got muddied as far as, you know, the direction that it went. I'm trying to think of, there was another example I had off the top of my head and
just while you're thinking it. That going back to the George Lucas thing, it's like he did the trilogy, but as much as he was kind of the owner of the ideas, it was a collaborative effort because the first one was like Fox given a chance. The second one was him like, okay, I need a director.
And then Irvin Kershner.
Yeah. And then by the third one, it was where he was getting into that yes man territory, where by the prequels, that's all that was. So then by the time he wants to do more movies, he's like, no. So,
and I think you see the same thing with Tomino, where it's like, you know, because on the original 79 show, he had the help of people like Yoshikazu Yasuhiko. And I always forget his name, but the script director, the one that was responsible for coming up with Manovsky particles. You know, these guys were, I think, essential to creating the success that the original series was. And kind of as you stray away from that, you know, you kind of lose a little bit of what Gundam was. But like you said, when you give Tomino complete creative control, you get things like G-Reco.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting, because I think at the end of the day, like the Force, it's a balance where it's
exactly.
I think it's good to have someone that's like, okay, this is the mastermind of this world, but we need to have, you know, you need to have other people with you. And we've learned that even working together, like having other people to kind of help sculpt the ideas.
I'm such an idiot. I'm wearing the hat. Kojima is another great example.
Yeah.
when Metal Gear without Kojima doesn't work, which it's hilarious because Metal Gear with Kojima sometimes doesn't work. You know, it's like,
yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like for like creators, sometimes it's like Metal Gear worked because it was a team. We had someone that was a visionary in terms of storytelling, but then we had some good developers know how to really hone in on the, you know, mechanical nature of the game.
Yeah.
And then it gets to where, you know, he kind of gets that yes man to him where it's like, oh, everyone loves his bizarre storytelling. So he doubles down on it. I'm bad at that one. But what happens is then, sometimes there's that pushback. Are there any creatives that have stuck with an IP for a long time and maybe are still working on that IP? And it doesn't, I wonder, like the guy that, isn't it Bruce Timm that writes animated Batman?
Yeah, he was the one that animated Batman.
But what did he write or animate?
I think he was just responsible for the visuals. Oh, I don't think he actually wrote it. But I could be wrong. I'm sure.
I see him still attached to this stuff.
Yeah, because all of those character designs, that's him.
Wow. Okay, so it's not like he might be actually still working on it, but it's just it's based on that world he kind of created.
Well, it looks like Kyle in chat is saying that he produces mainly now and that Paul Dini was the original writer.
Okay, well, I guess still producing, like seeing Bruce Tim on so many things for so long. And that's funny. I don't watch these Batman cartoons. I saw the animated series. Last night, I watched one on HBO Max.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not done with it, and I don't know what to think. I knew what I was getting into. It's like Batman goes to Antarctica to like bury a demon, but then like it's Lovecraftian, and then it comes out in Gotham.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. Batman doesn't seem like the kind of guy that needs to be dealing with like supernatural enemies like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree. Like that's something like when it came to the Justice League movies that came out, it's like, I don't care about Batman with like fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, but it was still cool to see it.
And then even like in the animated series, oh man, they introduced so many fantastic villains to his rogues gallery. I mean, like, Mr. Freeze was a character in the comics before, but like the way that they expanded upon him in that, what I think the episode's called like Heart of Ice. That episode is fantastic.
Yeah.
The Clayface episode where they first introduced Clayface and he's like this actor that's obsessed with his youth and the fact that he's losing roles because he's getting older. And then like, you know, the mob puts a hit on him and turns him into Clayface. Like these are such like really powerful stories. And you're sitting there as like, you know, a 10, 11 year old kid, like, this is wild.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, watching that. And it's funny because those stories are still pretty good. And and then I was thinking of something. Sorry that this is becoming the Batman explained. But
Batman explained.
You know, I was thinking, like, what would a future Gotham be like if Batman solved all crime? And then my thought would be then, like, maybe bigger corporations, state governments might get with him and be like, hey, we need your help. And then he starts becoming international. And then because he becomes international, one day he's gone for weeks. He comes back. His mansion has been overrun. So he has to land at the front, get in, and then it's a game called Batman Symphony of the Night with a K. And then he has to go through his mansion. And that, great idea.
Except then when you beat it, it turns upside down and you have to play as the Joker.
Well, okay, there's something there, actually. That's actually pretty funny. Like, because isn't there, like, maybe it's Riddler or Joker where they do hallucinations? Oh, Scarecrow.
Oh, yeah, Scarecrow.
Yeah. Perfect. That's a good idea. You can
and then you can make it a roguelike because, like, the mansion changes every time you...
Wow, see what happens when people collab? Because there you go. You just added to this idea. Okay, yeah, that's pretty good. But anyway, you know, just real quickly, like, kind of ending, because I'm talking about other stories and stuff. I really have an appreciation for the Universal Century Gundam. Like, even though I just recently got in... relatively recently compared to most here, like I can see they have that respect for that writing. I mean, just Hathaway being kind of what I consider the latest, even though there's Cuckoo's Doan's Island, Hathaway was kind of like the latest of that timeline. Hey, I heard a rumor, but I hear a lot of rumors or see a lot of rumors because I'm reading them. That the next, and I wanted, this might've been in Discord or maybe in your chat yesterday, that, the next unicorn is going to take place during F91.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which would be weird because that's like almost 20 years or more difference.
Yeah.
So I don't know if anyone else had heard that. I mean, I guess the idea is maybe just who has the unicorn, you know, because that whole idea about it's really locked up, but who has it?
It does sound like the UC Next 100 project is... Maybe it's not going to completely invalidate, you know, F91 and Crossbone and Victory, but it is going to kind of take them in a slightly different direction.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, UC Engage also is doing that promo thing in Japan right now where Unicorn F91 and Victory, and I think or they're like all like battling at the same time, but I think it's just like some weird crossover, but that... Yeah, UC Next 100, they did specifically talk about those properties. We're seeing that with the UC Engage. That must be something.
And they've been very kind of hush-hush about, I mean, it's Sunrise. They're kind of hush-hush about everything. Like, you know, it's like, oh, well, when is the live action movie coming out? When is Requiem for Vengeance coming out? Like, it's supposedly in fall.
Oh,
we heard the date October, but like,
yeah, I can't wait to start seeing more promo stuff for that. Like even on Netflix where it says like coming soon.
Yeah.
But
and honestly, you know, what's going to happen is it's going to be like 3 days before it goes up. It's like you're going to get the Netflix like, hey, coming soon.
Yeah. I hope they build up to that a little more. Don't need to, but personally,
did you see that at San Diego Comic-Con, they're actually going to have a Requiem for Vengeance booth?
Oh yeah. So that's a good sign.
That booth is fantastic. Uh-huh. Like it's got the chain link fence and it's, you know, all this like kind of rusted metal. It definitely, I hate using like the terms like grounded or realistic, but it definitely adds like a level of grit and grime to typical Gundam, you know, visual aesthetics.
Yeah, that is cool because I think it fits with UC. And you know what? I've been thinking too, like with this Requiem for Vengeance, and we're like waiting for the Gundam movie. I really do think the intention was to have this Requiem for Vengeance on Netflix, a Western produced CGI Gundam before the movie. Like it's almost like I think they would be further along in the movie right now, I think, if they didn't realize they needed to do this first. Because I really think it's a matter of, oh, a Gundam movie, let's see what's on Netflix. And if you're just watching those original movies and you're not an anime fan, you're not going to like it, I don't think. You know, because it's subtitled.
Yeah. Old animation. And I think that that's probably going to tie into our top 10 list that we're going to talk about here shortly.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's a good point. But let me ask you, Steven, how much do you think Requiem for Vengeance was made as a way to get people into a live action Gundam movie rather than it being just made on its own?
Well, I would say that, yeah, there's probably some credence to that theory, but the thing that kind of sticks out to me about Requiem for Vengeance as opposed to something like come to think of it, maybe I'm totally wrong. I was like, well, you know, they've got the Gundam Universe figure coming out, they've got the model kits coming out. It seems to me like Requiem for Vengeance is going to be something that's, you know, kind of standalone. But now that I think about it, it's like they came out with new versions of the Kasai and Penelope for Hathaway. They came out with all of the model kits from Kukuru's Doan's Island. They came out with almost every model kit from Gundam Seed Freedom. So, like, it really does seem like they're just kind of keeping the content train moving.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, it's cool that this is an English first production, you know, for Netflix. True. Like, that, yeah. So, and that made me even think, too, like, other ideas for Gundam stories that would be, you know, after UC 100, because I think it was really neat when we were talking yesterday guys, check it out if you didn't watch the show from yesterday, but we got a deep dive into like Char, but the greater world that he's in, who is actually in power, you know? And I really think after UC, you know, 100, it's like who really is in power. You have, you know, by Hathaway, we talked about this, how the what is it called?
Manhunters.
Yes, or, thank you. That's exactly what I was looking for. They're kind of the ones that are the troublemakers. Yeah, exactly.
Which is hilarious because, you know, in Unicorn, it's Ekoas, and Ekoas becomes the Manhunters.
Yeah.
Like, so as much as we like Ekoas and, you know, they're like the good version of the Federation, you know, it seems like power consistently corrupts those who possess it.
And so what a cool idea would be to kind of use that foundation that Hathaway did with the Headhunters. We see them with that cockpit that's like right on the crotch area, or that little thing where the guy's standing. And then, and I brought this up before, but like, think of even like Akira, that Japanese movie.
Yeah.
Or anime, where think of there's people in UC 100 plus, and there's kids that instead of being on their bikes, you know, they're in like a Zaku 2 or a GM.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine how much, because you see it in, you know, the world today, like you see these minefields that were used in like World War One, World War Two, or like the Vietnam War, that like there's still mines laying around that people could stumble upon. You imagine in the Gundam universe, there's all this military equipment that's just been abandoned on Earth, whether it's, you know, Zeon equipment or Federation equipment. And you see that all the way into Turn A Gundam, where they're digging up Zaku 2s and Zetas to use against the Moon Race.
Yeah, and that is pretty neat, because if we think about where the Earth could potentially be, I would bet there's so many zones on Earth that are abandoned due to war that was occurring, and then people could slowly get back in there. Like, it would be cool if it could be like Point Break or something, where someone that works, you know, with one of the corporations is tasked to be like, hey, there's these kids that are racing these mobile suits. They're doing it illegally, but we think one of them might be a new type. Infiltrate the gang, kind of hang out with them, befriend this guy, and then see if we could turn him over, you know, and kind of, you know, that would be pretty interesting. I think it's cool to take stories from different worlds and then kind of reconfigure them.
Yeah, I mean, those, to me, before Marvel got, you know, like Joss Whedonized, Marvel had this excellent formula where they would take a specific genre of film and then just put like a superhero twist on it. So it was like Captain America, the First Avenger, is essentially just a World War II movie, but it happens to have Captain America in it.
Yeah, it's a good example.
And like the second Captain America is almost like a Jason Bourne style, like modern suspense thriller that just happens to have Captain America and the Winter Soldier in it. You know, now that all of the Marvel movies have just become like, you know, snarky fourth wall breaking trash. But
I know. Yeah.
But, you know, I love that type of like, let's take an established format and then put a little twist on it. And in the comic book world, like, for instance, if you're familiar with the movie Departed.
Yeah.
There is a comic book series. I cannot recommend it enough. Illustrated by Sean Phillips, written by Ed Brubaker. It's called Sleeper. And it, you know, takes place in a world that has superheroes and supervillains. And there is a guy that works for the FBI, and he happens to have superpowers. And they want him to infiltrate this criminal organization. Just it's the exact same theme as The Departed. It's just, you know, his handler ends up in a coma. And so nobody knows that he's undercover as a supervillain. And so he has to like do increasingly horrible things in order to continue to prove that he's not a spy to these supervillains. And it's like,
I love that. That
stuff is awesome. So it's like, imagine that, but then Gundam, right? Like imagine like a Federation agent that's been implanted with a Zeon troop, but no one knows that he's undercover. And so he has to keep doing like horrible things in order to prove that he's loyal to Zeon. And then of course, like the suspense keeps ramping up because, you know, well, how did this person get away? You know, we had a complete assassination attempt where we were going to try and take out the vice foreign minister of the Federation, and like somebody tipped him off. Was it you? Was it him? Like what's going on? Like,
yeah, that's
that stuff would be awesome.
And that reminds me of the James Bond movie License to Kill, where Felix Leiter and his wife gets killed. So he takes revenge, and, you know, MI6 won't see it as an official mission. So he quits. And then he finds the guy that killed him. It's this drug boss. And he goes to be a bodyguard for him. He's like, hey, I'll help be your security. And then slowly he's dismantling the organization, like framing the other guys. Yeah, that's a cool kind of plot. Which, thing.
By the way, that was the Punisher, like the old Tom Jane Punisher. Where, like after his family was killed, it was like, you know, he's systematically taking down John Travolta's criminal organization. Again, it's like,
you know, that's pretty neat, because it almost seems like when Disney's like, okay, we need to make a movie on this property. It seems like they're like, what are some ideas, instead of being like, what is maybe a certain type of plot that already exists that would work for the themes of this superhero. And I think that's kind of a good way to go about it. And I like also, I always go back to this, like James Cameron with Alien, and then Alien 2, he just put an S with a dollar sign. Because I have this thing in my head where I don't think, and there could be, but there's not a good werewolf movie that could be the way it is. Like, think of Alien, but a werewolf. And there's,
yeah, I guess so.
Like,
I
mean, the American werewolf in Paris and American London, they're kind of goofy, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think that what's interesting is that the kind of werewolf story typically has that same angle as, like, The Incredible Hulk, which I think that was kind of the inspiration for The Incredible Hulk, is that the werewolf isn't necessarily scary because it is this monster that's chasing you, the werewolf is scary because it becomes this internal force that you can't control. So typically werewolf stories tend to be about like somebody that gets bit by a werewolf and then they're like, I can't control this thing that happens to me once a month and I'm scared I'm going to hurt someone.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's worth flipping that on its head and make it where if someone gets bit by a werewolf, they themselves become a different person. And it's almost like then they can like use that at will, because I would like that to be like the first movie. One person gets bit and it changes them. So it's almost like, think of the Xenomorph.
And then werewolves with a Z.
Well, see, that's what I was going to say would be the next one. But think of like in Alien, the Xenomorph was able to reflect on what was going on.
Yeah.
He's like, man, I'm caught in this ship. There's these people here. I got to take them out. You know, like that it's more of an animal. But think of if it was someone that really, not only could they change into a werewolf, but they also changed. But then also the sequel would be werewolves. Because I just want something like Aliens, but with werewolves and swords.
I dig it.
And the werewolves have these long claws and people are sword fighting werewolf claws. Come on.
I mean,
it sounds cheesy, but I'd love that.
Honestly, like, you know, these are the types of ideas that I think would have been made into movies in the late 90s, early 2000s. But now, you know, people are afraid of taking a chance on like an unknown property, like a new IP.
Yeah. Well, speaking of taking a chance, actually, this doesn't work, but we're going to go through the top 10. And I'm actually not going to share my screen. I was going to share my screen, but because I don't want to like give it away.
Oh, okay. Fair.
We're going to do the top 10 best Gundam anime of all time. And this is by Bbomb.com by Ajit Kumar. It has zero comments. So don't know this guy.
Zero comments yet. I have a feeling that there are going to be a few, few comments after today's podcast.
Okay. Well, let's see. So chat, like I'm going to go down the list starting from 10. I'm going to call out what it's called, but in chat, just throw in what you would rank it out of 10. Okay. And I'm curious what you think too, Steven. The first one is Mobile Suit Gundam Wing, Endless Waltz specifically.
So not the series, the
not
movie.
Not the series, yeah.
Interesting. Well, where would you put that one?
Oh, my God. That's so tough. I mean, I could probably name 10 other Gundam shows I like more. So I don't know if that would be on the list. If 10, then.
Yeah, I would probably put it around 10 as well. I mean, there's definitely.
Yeah, not that I'm saying it's bad, you know, but.
Now, would your opinion change if it were the series and not the movie?
No. Even though I think yesterday on your show, I was kind of saying how it has this charm that I'm looking for, but no. It seems like, some in chat are saying 10. Agreed. Laugh man. Okay. Next up, Mobile Suit Gundam Thunderbolt at 9. I can see myself having that in a 5.
Really that high?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think like, okay, if I could, cause I definitely have my top 5. So I would probably put this around 7 personally.
Yeah. That sounds pretty good actually. Curious. Let's see. Ultronimus never saw Thunderbolt.
What?
How can we change this?
Yeah, we need to remedy this. And I guess because technically it's two movies, two miniseries that were made into movies. So you have like December Sky and then Bandit Flower, right?
Yeah. Jankill X 10, Psionic Shadow 7. Okay. Let's see.
And this does not specify whether it's December Sky or.
No, because it says 2015 through 2016. So I think it's. And I even look at it as a series. Like when I tell people about Thunderbolt, I look at it as like, oh, it's, you know, two movies.
Yeah.
Here, number 8, Mobile Suit Gundam 0080 War in the Pocket.
Man, can you believe it's so low on this list?
I know. I would probably put it at 2 or 3.
Yeah, I would put it at 3.
Cool. Okay. Here's what people think. Oh, yeah, we're getting Ultronimus got 3. Simply's new type 10 out of 10 Bernies. I mean, hey, in for as sad as it is, oh yeah, it would be up way, way higher.
Yeah, it's like an O. Henry story, but Gundam.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, Mobile Suit Gundam Seed at 7.
Wow.
Yeah, that wouldn't even rank for me.
Yeah, typically I wouldn't rank it either. Now, if we were talking Destiny, where would you put it?
Ooh. Destiny could potentially be the real 10. I don't know. I would have to sit down and I feel like there's 10 UC movies I'd rather watch before Destiny. I don't know, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ultronimus is saying 5, but I love Seed. Oh, and no one at 7. Top 5 at least. That's cool. You know what? At the end of the day, I love to see the love for things that I don't like.
There you go. Because
it's sometimes kind of neat.
Yeah, if I had to place it on this particular list, I guess 9 is all I've got because I've already put 10 as a...
You could break the rules. Your co-host. Xionic Shadow with 6? Okay.
All right. All
Black right. TriStar saying the suit design is top-notch, which is true. Which is true. Okay. Here's something. Number 6, Mobile Suit Gundam 08 MS Team.
Ooh, interesting. All right. So where are you thinking 8th MS Team sits in your list?
That could be a 5 or 6.
Yeah. I was thinking probably like a 5 or 6 myself.
Yeah. Oh, we got Xionic Shadow with a 2. I respect that.
Ultronimus is saying 2 as well.
No one 5 or 6? Yeah.
And I guess part of that is like the rest of us are kind of saying like, okay, we know what our favorites are. So we're kind of saving those
waiting
for something that we like.
That's literally it. So it's cool to see then Xionic Shadow have 2 on there because like that means he's committed. Like he,
that's a very, yeah.
You know, one thing though about this series is I think it's almost perfect. If it wasn't for some of the main character designs and the hijinks that sometimes happen, like, oh, I'm forgetting their name, but the music, when the music, the guy, you know, making a song and he's talking about Eleanor. That. Yeah, there you go. Some of that, a little goofy, but, you know, I that's part of the charm of the characters.
Yeah. Now, everyone kind of comments about how this series is actually a canon and in-universe movie that was based on something that happened in the Universal Century. I've never heard, well, I've heard this rumor, but I've never seen any kind of confirmation of that. So if anybody has the link to like whatever interview or
what you're
like
saying manga, that the OIT MS team is based on.
So yeah, what the fan theory is, I guess what the canon is that supposedly the 8th MS team series is a movie that was made in the Universal Century.
Oh.
About like a Romeo and Juliet type story between a Federation and Zeon pilot. So it's like you could imagine like Char Aznable taking Lala out to a date and there's a Cineplex that's got, you know, Mobile Suit Gundam, the 8th MS team is like a movie that is being made.
That's interesting. I could see that. I love that. And it's like the 00 movie. The beginning of the 00 movie, they were watching a movie.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay.
I don't know how I feel about that. And again, I've never seen like the evidence to suggest it, but I figure it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Let's move on. Number 5, Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans.
Ooh, so you haven't finished this one yet, right?
No, I haven't finished. I'm on episode 5. It wouldn't be in the top 10 yet. No. You know, just because I haven't got that far yet, although I enjoy it more than Seed in terms of storytelling.
So. You know, it has such a strong start.
Okay, well, I'll find out what happens.
not to like spoil it for you, but
this is interesting because Ultronimus says, for instance, that doesn't place for me. And even Black TriStar saying I'm a UC fanboy, not a top 10 for me.
Yeah.
Xionic Shadow saying 4. No one saying top 5. Okay. Yeah, that's another one where it's like it's good in general. People tend to like it. So.
Yeah. We'll I mean, I'd probably put it around 7 or 8. You know, in this list.
It doesn't have to be. I'm curious if you didn't have to rank it, would you just not? Or is it something that could be top 10?
I would say it's definitely top 15.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool, actually. All right, here's one. Ooh, this is a good one. Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn.
Ooh, all right. So where are you putting this one?
Wow, that is a good point. I would say...
Because on this list, it's a 4.
I could give it a 4.
Yeah?
I could see myself giving it a 4, yeah.
I would probably say a 5 or 6. You know, I've definitely come around on it.
Wow.
I still think that it's fan fiction. If anything is an in-universe movie that didn't happen, it's no, I'm kidding.
It is funny, though, the more people talk about it, like when we were kind of talking more about Unicorn yesterday on your show, I was kind of appreciating it even more, even though I do like it. When I first saw it, I thought it was the dumbest thing I was watching. I was like, this is anime. This is why I don't watch it.
Yeah, you know, I do appreciate a lot of things that Unicorn does. It does give Double Zeta its fair shake. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see in the chat. No one is saying 3rd, Black TriStar 7, Zion Shadow 5. Yeah, that's all good.
Yeah, still placing somewhere around there.
Oh, this is pretty good. Mobile Suit Gundam, The Origin. That's number 3 for them, and this is the whole series, and I would put that at like a 7 or 8.
Yeah, 7 or 8 sounds fair, yeah. Honestly. You know, I love the Origin manga. Wasn't crazy about the Origin anime. I mean, obviously the character designs, the animation itself is fantastic, but story-wise what it does for me is, you know, not quite there.
Okay. You know what? I wonder if it was time and place, because for me, I had just gotten into Gundam, and once I liked Gundam, I'm like, oh, they have a prequel series. And then I watch it, I'm like, oh, wow, that's how it all happened. So I wonder if that's, time and place. Zionic Shadow's giving it a 1.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's scary because we're at 3, and there's a handful of things that haven't been brought up yet. So
yeah, right. That's a scary thought.
Let's go to 2, the original Mobile Suit Gundam.
There you go.
That's a 2, and that could be a 1 for me also.
Yeah, honestly, I'd put it at 2. I mean, I think that this is a perfect.
Look, if you're doing 2, I know what your 1 is.
Yeah.
I'm the same as me.
Right. We're not complicated men.
Let's see. Okay, so no one is saying I'll never put Mobile Suit Gundam at 1, but it easily clocks in at 2. Yeah, I could see. Yeah, definitely.
And I think I would be ashamed of any Gundam fan that put up a top 10 list that didn't include the original series in it somewhere.
Yeah. Yep. You know what? I just saw that there's like an ad going up. I can't do anything about that. Okay. all right. So we're going to go to number 1. The number 1 Gundam show ranked by this dude at B-Bomb is Mobile Suit Gundam 00. I could see that in my top 10.
I mean, it's one of the Gundam shows that was ever made.
I it's funny, I do like this. And so I think no one is getting to the point that we're all in unison about to get to.
Right.
I think, in my opinion, the true number 1 is Zeta.
Right. It has to be. Right.
I mean, I think it's only because, as good as the original was, again, the sequel was able to have Tomino do whatever he wanted.
Right. They might as well have made it Zeta with an S that was a dollar sign.
Oh, there you go. Which, you know what? Hey, double Zeta is close enough.
There you go.
They just added another Z. And it has multiple, you know, we get with like the crew, you know.
There you go.
Okay, so I want to see. Okay, so no one is saying 00 can be in my top 10 for sure, but it's not top 1. Yeah.
I mean, 00 is one of the few series that I did not finish. I fell asleep in the first 2 episodes and then just never picked it back up.
So I will say that I remember when I first watched it, the beginning stuff was kind of slow because I think it's really taken its time to world build, which then I appreciated as it went. It made me totally enjoy the movie that came after, because the idea was, okay, well, we can't just have another thing just happen again, like most Gundam does. And instead, it went a completely different direction. Which, yeah. So, and I love the music in 00. Like, it's better than music from MS Igloo. If I was to compare with UC.
Ouch. That's a good question. Is like, where would Igloo fall on your ranking list?
Yeah, it would be. That's interesting, actually, because I almost feel like they're Wikipedia articles that you only need to like look at once or maybe reference later, because they're all real short, but they're all talking about specific thing in an event and the details behind it, the machinery behind it. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
But
and like it's like the Evolve series. Like I love
That's a good way to explain it. Like, yeah, even though there is a little bit more story to MS Igloo, it's still more like Evolve, or these smaller little things that it's hard to fully kind of like dive into because they're short, you know? So what about Double Zeta? Would that be in your top 10?
Yeah, that would be in my top 10 for sure. Probably even top 5, I'm thinking. Like, what would be your top 5?
I think it would potentially be Zeta, the original, and then like Unicorn and Double Zeta would be interchangeable. And then I would put stuff like Hathaway. Well, no, actually 00. I mean, not 00. 0080.
Yeah.
And then stuff like 08th MS Team, Hathaway. That would be interesting sometime to actually, and we'll do this later, come to the show with a proper thought out list of each of our, so we can kind of make our claim, because I bet they would be similar. And then as we go, they would be pretty different.
Yeah. Honestly, I think that would be the most fun to have. Like if you and I came to the table with like our own arguments for and against particular Gundam series, but not for the top five, it would be for 6 through 10. Because I think top five, we probably have similar, you know, Zeta, the original.
Double Zeta.
Double Zeta, 0080. And then, you know, probably like Unicorn somewhere in there. You know, maybe for you, like Unicorn would be 5. But for me, it would be like, you know, 6 or 7. But yeah, going in that like that 5 to 10 range, that's when you have to really start thinking like, okay, what really deserves to be here? Because.
Yeah, because like, for instance, Char's Counterattack. Is that a top 10? For a lot of people, probably is.
Yeah, see, Char's Counterattack would probably be my 4 or 5.
It's funny. No one just said, I think Char's Counterattack gets nowhere near enough credit. I think it got too much credit, because that was one thing when I first got into Gundam. People were like, this was the VHS I grew up with. This is the coolest thing. Char and Amuro, the new Gundam. And then, you know, I watched it. I was like, okay, well.
Dude, I remember in high school, I had this friend, his name was Steven, coincidentally enough.
Whoa.
And yeah, weird. But, you know, I was like, you know, I think if I had to name my favorite mobile suit, and this was, you know, me at 17, I'm like, it would be the Goof flight type. And he was like, no, man, you need to watch Char's Counterattack. Like, wait until you see Funnels. And I was like, well, I've seen Funnels in Zeta Gundam. Like, what? Like what's?
Oh, okay. So it's probably someone that saw Char's Counterattack but never saw Zeta or something.
Yeah, you know, and so like to me, I don't know, the remote weapons never really like, and I guess that's why, you know, something like Witch from Mercury wasn't super exciting to me, because like the whole shield separating and like becoming funnels essentially wasn't like something that was like, oh man, wow, cool, flying metal objects, you know.
Right, like that's like part of, I think, us liking these shows and movies we like is like watching the technology being used. And yeah, in Witch for Mercury, I like the idea of a shield being like a bit system, but seeing it play out in Witch for Mercury was more of the fantastical side of science fiction, you know, and not like the grounded side, you know, even though there's all that crazy stuff going on there.
And I mean, that's where like credit is due to IBO, where like a lot of the combat that happens in IBO is this very like close quarters, you know, no beam weapons. Like it's just like mace on sword and like.
Yeah, that's why. Any battle that's happened so far in IBO, I've been like loving it.
And IBO has fantastic music. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm starting to come around to it now. When it comes in and I'm like, yeah, okay.
And even I'll admit that the music in Seed and 00 are really good.
They really,
and this is kind of just Gundam wide, like the soundtracks for each series really encapsulate the mood and the aesthetic that they're trying to go for in that particular series.
Then that's a good idea. We'll have to do top 10 soundtracks.
That's a good one.
That would be fun. You know what? I might plan for that next time. And I think I'll then do a question in the YouTube comment or the thing where you can make a post. I'll ask about that because I'm curious what other people think about the music, because sometimes for me, the music and the visuals or the stories like intertwined, like I don't separate those. So I might like the music because how it was used. You know, or sometimes I might just like a song, like someone said CCA best soundtrack. Yeah, Sharks Counterattack has great music, especially when they first showed the new Gundam. Like that was straight up like how you do badass reveals, you know, with that music and the title.
Like, yeah. And even some of just like the in universe music, like the song that they're singing to Char on the train is so.
Oh, yeah.
It's got this like very cool, I don't know if it's like a Soviet vibe to it.
Where right. It has like an Eastern Bloc sort of style, like.
Yeah, folky. I love it.
Yeah. 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 That is interesting. Remember there's that time where there was that potential, like that thing about like it was a happy birthday song or something.
Yeah. That's another one of those rumors that like I've never been able to
verify, but you've heard. Yeah. That's funny. Well, cool. Yeah, so that's it for that sequence. That was a lot of fun. I want to end it with...
Find.
What's that?
Good find on that article.
Like, oh, I know. Like, sometimes stuff like that seems super basic, but then when you actually have a conversation about it, it allows you to dive into more nuances with Gundam. So, which, as we were talking, I something else came up that we'll like end the show with, another little conversation here is... In the Universal Century Gundam, is there room for a story? And maybe they've already done this or not. Like, could there be a time when new types are hunted down and killed? Like, no more experimenting, no more trying to capture and utilize them. It's like we just had to hunt them down and killing. Maybe adding a layer, you know, it's kind of usually the space noids that are separated from the people from Earth. But how much is that rooted in being a new type? Not really as much. I think it's more they're in space, you know, because you see like Amuro's a new type and, you know, so I wonder if it goes to then like the idea is it doesn't matter if you're in space, you're on Earth, but if you're a new type, now you're being hunted down because you're a threat. You could be dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, I bet you could make the argument that like maybe the vice foreign minister from Char's Counterattack, his wife that didn't go to space with him. You know, she might become some kind of like anti-new type activist because then she finds out that, you know, the girl that she hated, Quest, like the whole reason she left him was because of Quest. And then Quest went on to kill him. So like, you know, would she have this propaganda campaign where she's doing rallies that, you know, have like, you know.
Dude, I think that is the perfect place to add that into the UC timeline, because when you get further on, even that discussion with Hathaway, it's like they talked about new types as if it's a thing, but like not like anywhere. It's almost like it was talked about in myth for some reason. So it could be that there is this sort of idea to, and then really it's the then experimentation. So for instance, something like Full Frontal or Zoltan, once we get to narrative where it's these like crazy messed up things, because maybe the only way they can get around that is they're trying to enhance people because they're really hunting down the real new types. There's a story there. And that should be part of my story about the biker gang, but it's a mobile suit gang. And,
and you know, it does like, it's interesting that, you know, you have like Zoltan, this like failed cyber new type, but they had kind of perfected cyber new types by the time that came around, because Gune was not. You know, like he was not mentally scarred or anything. Like he was a normal guy.
I wonder if it's one of those things where it doesn't, well, a normal guy, but it could have been potentially he was Giren's, you know, blood. So what, maybe that's how it worked.
Yeah. There could be something like that, like a biological component that makes people more suitable for cyber new type enhancement.
almost like unlocking the ability in them. Like they have the ability and something needs to happen in order for it to kind of like unlock. Like a coming to Jesus moment or like finding God, but it's like some spiritual awakening. And then all of a sudden, you know, that I like that stuff because I feel like, you know, it reminds me of like Star Wars. Like it would be cool if they tell a Star Wars story that takes place maybe in a different time period, but Force users are hunted down and killed, not just Jedi, but just in general, anyone. Oh, they're sensitive to the Force. Oh my God, it's a witch, you know, even though they do witches, but that kind of.
See, I think that that's something that's missing from Gundam video games as well. Like one of the things like in Knights of the Old Republic is like, you don't necessarily have to awaken as a Jedi. If you don't want to, you can play through the whole game with guns if you want to. But like, you know, when it comes to Gundam video games, you always have to pick, like, are you going to be a new type or are you going to be an old type? And it's like, what if you start, like, just baseline, everybody starts as an old type, and then, like, throughout the game, there's something that, you know, well, are you going to choose to unlock this
new type? Yeah, or maybe how you go about completing certain missions or, let's say I'm someone that skips cutscenes and dialogue. Let's say someone is playing the game, but they're initiating with the dialogue, and that then allows them to maybe in-game expand their mind. You know, that would be neat, where it's based on your play style.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because could you gamify cutscenes or dialogue? Like, if you skip them or not, that could determine maybe how the game is presented to you moving forward.
Yeah, I always prefer when things are built into the gameplay as opposed to being built into dialogue options. Like,
right. I agree.
You know, if you choose to kill this person or if you tranquilize them, like that's the difference between whether you're good or bad or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where, because there's a lot of games that do that where
right. The
decisions are made at a gameplay level and not just like, yes, I think you're the good guy. Congratulations, you got 30 good points.
Well, actually, speaking of gameplay, I actually meant to cover this. Gundam Breaker 4 open network test actually is tonight.
Yeah.
And it's only on console. So Switch, PS4, PS5. I might be trying it later. And that's what Jawan Bridges was bringing up, how he's saying we need a true PvP in Gundam Breaker 4. Which, that is actually a good point that he brings up, how the whole point of it is you're kind of building and, like, kitting out, like, what you think is the coolest Gundam to go out and fight. But then you're just fighting AI, which there's a ceiling to what you can do with AI.
And you can game the system pretty easily. Yeah. Like, I remember in Gundam Breaker 3, it was very easy to, like, just build a broken build that would just cheese the entire level.
And apparently, from what I understand, they have modified it so that you can't do that in this game. Like the whole bit system being all crazy. That could just be these early play tests we're seeing. And then maybe eventually you can get to that. But
I think that was what they were trying to do, or what they may still be trying to do with the Gundam Metaverse, where it's like, you know, you take your custom Gunpla and, you know, take it against somebody else.
Oh, that looks good on that stand.
Oh, yeah, right?
That's a good one.
Again, for those of you who are audio only, it's the Midnight Hatter custom stand with a Titans Mark II on top.
Excellent. Well, that just about does it. That was a good conversation. The chat was awesome. Lots of cool stuff in the chat. Thanks, everyone that tuned in and all that. I want to shout out again. So, Simply New Type, Kyle. And myself and Steven now have another show on Monday on the Free Speech Geek channel. I'll share the links in Discord before the next one. And the idea is really for us to be able to nerd out and talk about this stuff, but we don't have to, it doesn't have to be like Gundam specific. So that way we can kind of branch out. I can get my Batman, my X-Men, my Castlevania fix some other way.
Yeah, and Star Wars. Don't forget.
That's sad, isn't it? I just forgot Star Wars.
No. Yeah. We all.
All right, everyone. Thanks for joining. We will see you next time. Have a good one.
Cheers, everyone.